Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 17th day of July, 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. And then a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Matt Bennett from TGM out of Windsor, Illinois. Hear all about the cash grain market from him, and we'll take a quick look at the weather forecast along the way. We'll get our latest installment of Backyard Industry from Lisa Braltz, and we'll hear a little bit about the Fish Farm Challenge from Monsanto and the National 4-H Council. And it all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check now the numbers as they settled up in Chicago on this Thursday afternoon. Futures for the soft red winter wheat at $5.50¾ were up 12¾ today. December at $5.73½, up 11½ cents, and the March at $5.94¾, 11¼ higher. The hard red in the September at $6.49, up 11¾ as well. Corn pit, September futures $3.79½, up a penny and a quarter. December at $3.87¼, a half higher, and the March futures at $3.99. They finished a half cents higher. May futures at $4.07½, up 3/4, and July at $4.15¼ in the corn pit. For next year, up 0.75¢. December of 2015, $4.26, up a penny and a half. August soybeans at $11.74¾, 12½ cents lower. September at $11.10½, down 11. November beans $10.94, down 8. And January at $11.75¾, 8¾ lower. May futures 11.17, down 9¼. In July, soybeans at 11.24½, 9½ lower. Bean meal at 380.50, down 3.20. Bean oil at 36.37, down 46 cents. Live cattle futures finished the August at $150.65, $2.97½ higher. October at $153.70, up 2.40. August feeders at $211.60 per 100 pounds, $1.77½ higher. September at $212.35, up $1.85. And August lean hogs today at $128.85, finished $1.67½ lower. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the afternoon. August contract, $103.11 a barrel. They're up $1.91. The RBOB or wholesale price of gasoline at $2.87¢. That's down 0.5¢. Ethanol futures at $2.10¢, up 0.9¢. And the spread between the two is 0.1¢ lower than it was yesterday at 76¢ wide. Natural gas at $3.97¢, 14¢ lower. And diesel fuel down, just about unchanged at $2.85¢ for the day. August at $1,316.90 in the gold, up $17.10, and the U.S. dollar at 80.5. That's down 0.05 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the Urbana-Champaign area for the National Weather Service on this Thursday afternoon. We should see for the afternoon mostly sunny skies, the high of 77 degrees and a light southwest wind. Tonight, clear, a low of 54, east-southeast winds at 3 to 5, and Friday, sunny skies and 80 degrees. Friday night, partly cloudy and 56. On Saturday, mostly sunny and 82. Saturday night, partly cloudy and 64. And Sunday, partly sunny skies and 83. Sunday night, partly cloudy and 66. Mostly sunny on Monday and a high of 85 degrees. And Monday night, partly cloudy and a low of 68. You can always check out all of our programming, if you'd like, on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find everything from the opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between. And as we get closer to the end of the August month, you'll start to see in our Ag Outlook schedule some dates popping up. So check that, too, right here at willag.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
It's Thursday, July the 17th, 2014. Dan Zwicker is on the phone line. He works with CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana, but is traveling today. Good afternoon to you, Dan. How are you?
Doing fine, Todd.
Did you find a good place to pull off, and where are you today?
Well, someplace on 10. I'm not too sure. It's raining down here. I'm getting ready to come up north, so I'm going to bring the heat with me.
Well,
I understand you guys need some growing degree days.
We're going to need to catch up, and if I see the weather right, it looks like we're going to catch up. Where are you going to be, and what are you going to be doing?
Well, I'm going to start off Saturday with a bunch of AGRs that I went to college with many, many years ago. We have a summer meeting up in Pontiac. And then starting the first week there, I'll be in northeast Iowa, and then I'll be doing a lot of meetings in northern Illinois where a lot of our facilities are. And then the second week of July, I'm going to be down in southern Illinois and southern Indiana along the Ohio River Valley where a lot of our elevator locations are. So I'm going to be doing a lot of producer meetings here over the next couple of weeks.
Well, I know people will be interested to follow you, and if they're working with some of those elevators, they probably have already heard about it, but they can always check out their local CGB elevator and see where you happen to be. Okay, so lots of things are happening in the marketplace today, and I suppose the one that may have the most impact over the long term, or none at all, might be what happened in Russia with the Malaysian airliner that dropped out of the sky, apparently shot down. Still unclear about what happened there. But it does have an impact on the market, though. I think the trade ignored it pretty much for the day. Is that right?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, you take a look at the wheat market. It was kind of sloppy earlier, and then the wheat market did come back a little bit, and not exactly sure how it finished. But if we would, let's say if the violence would accelerate between the separatists and the Ukrainians and whatnot, that may begin to, that could impact the import side of that country or their export side of that country, and then that would maybe put them in a column of being an unreliable supplier for a short period of time, depending upon how that situation plays out, and that may bring more business to the United States on corn and wheat. That would be the only thing that I could see, at least initially, depending upon how things do play out. I've been listening to it on the radio, and I don't know. I don't think anybody really knows exactly what happened, but we'll eventually find out, and but it, you know, that would be my initial reaction is that if that civil war would accelerate for one reason or the other, that may impact their export side of that country.
Yeah, and so the wheat market did rally by the end of the day. The September was up 12 and three quarters, December up 11 and a half cents. So it looked at the same thing. Apparently traders did and said, well, we're not certain what will happen, but we'll hedge some of our bets that if things go wrong, that wheat will be one of those things that begins to be shorter in supply across the globe as it won't be making its way out of the Baltic into the Black Sea area, at least from Ukraine, and maybe other places further down the line. But let's skip through that and talk about the corn market in particular. What do you see in that market, and what do you hear from your elevators across Iowa and Illinois about the size of the crop and your expectations as we move through the month of July?
Well, I think the expectations are still very, very high. I haven't heard anybody really say anything other than, you know, the potential is just phenomenal in many of the areas. We all realize we still have the month of August to go through. I do think there was enough wind damage through parts of Iowa, Minnesota, northern Illinois that we do have some gooseneck corn out there. whether or not that's enough to, you know, put much of a dent in the national average year yield remains to be seen. We still have a lot of waist-high corn or knee-high corn in those southern areas of Minnesota, northern Iowa, and Wisconsin. So the crops don't look as good as what they do in Illinois, I think, once you get outside of Illinois. But everything I hear in Illinois is, you know, just phenomenal. You know, put whatever number you want to put on it, and you're getting a lot of private crop estimates. Estimators, you know, doing this 171 bushel per acre on a national average yield. We'll see at the end of the day. I'm more in the opinion that when you have short crop years, the market usually goes way too low in estimating the yield, and when you have big crop years, the market goes way too high on the national average yield. So it wouldn't surprise me that we're maybe putting in the biggest of the biggest crop now in the market, or between now and the August crop report. There's a lot of skepticism whether or not USDA will go that high, as what some of these private estimates are, because a lot of their data they use is five-year average data, and everybody's wanting to say that this is the exception that you should probably, if you're going to use five-year data, you want to use the upper end of the five-year data rather than the average. So I think that's what's maybe given the corn market a little support. It did kind of meet that measuring gap objective on the daily chart of 377. I think we hit 78. So there was a couple objectives there, one at 77, one at 79 on Dease corn. They met that. The market did bounce off of that. We're, you know, unchanged to slightly higher here for the week. We'll see whether or not we can pull out a higher weekly finish. But it does look to me like the corn market's wanting to at least find initial support here and maybe see how this thing plays out. A lot of times the last week of the month, the market will go opposite of what the dominant trend was. And in this case, since we've been dominantly down during the month of July, maybe the short covering rally, profit taking from the short side maybe begins a little early this year, and the market kind of tries to bounce in here or hold steady anyway between now and the end of the month, and then we'll kind of wait on what USDA says.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us. Have safe travels to Texas.
Very well.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana, and joins us here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from Common Ground Food Co-op in downtown Urbana, with a deli featuring iced lattes made with fairly traded ingredients and local milk, and a salad bar filled with local and organic ingredients. More information is at commonground.coop. And from the Black Dog Smoke and Ale House, serving barbecue beef brisket, pork shoulder, ribs, chicken, and more, slow-cooked over a wood-fired smoker. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. The Black Dog, 201 North Broadway in downtown Urbana.
Every other week on Thursday afternoon, Lisa Braltz leaves us another edition of Backyard Industry. Today, we'll take a look at a silver lining to all those unwanted plants popping up in gardens this summer.
Recent heavy rains have certainly made gardening interesting. The vast amounts of water visited upon our area have had two effects. It's hard to get outside and work when the garden is a swamp. And while waiting for things to dry out, unwanted plants, weeds, get out of hand. Such is the case at Backyard Industry headquarters anyway. And of course, as I was pulling wayward plants out of the soil a couple of days ago, I started thinking about the ones I could eat. Foraging is hot right now, but only recently have we in this country gotten fully away from it. And come on, some of us have a favorite mulberry tree we pick a few from on occasion. People who enjoy eating from the wild still scope out places in rural areas to find mushrooms and sunchokes and wild asparagus. But urban foraging, even in large cities, is growing in popularity. Lamb's Quarter, which never met an environment it didn't like, is a great example. It's even enjoyed excellent press on a couple of trendy food websites this summer. Really? Lamb's Quarter? Lamb's Quarter can be a bit of a pain, especially if it goes to seed, but it's not really considered invasive and is native to the United States. Dandelions are also everywhere and are very edible, but are considered borderline invasive and were introduced in this country from Europe. Purslane, another highly edible plant that is probably taking up real estate in your garden right now, is from India and the Middle East originally and is also considered a borderline invasive plant. One problem with invasive plants is that they like where they've been introduced so much, whether their introduction was accidental or on purpose, that they end up crowding out other plants that are native or cause problems for the cultivation of other plants for food, both commercially and in home gardens.
Plants like pigweed are growing into the cornfields and causing a lot of extra work.
Dustin Kelly is a food entrepreneur from Urbana, Illinois.
Bindweed is a big problem for tractors and for gardeners who want to have their vegetables, but suddenly they have to spend all this time keeping away this species that doesn't seem to behave itself. It just spreads quickly. It grows faster, it reproduces all by itself, and it overshades other things.
Dustin's main invasive plant of interest is the autumn olive, also known as the autumn berry. The plant was introduced to the United States from Asia in the 1800s and has done time as a landscaping plant and as a plant used for hedgerows on farms. It's considered by many to be invasive in our area, and even he wasn't sure what to do with his trees and their small red berries at first. But then...
I found out that they are, in fact, totally edible, and that people across the United States have been known about that and forage them and make jams and jellies. I found an article from the Department of Natural Resources of Illinois, the IDNR, that talked about autumn olives and how they're a pest and yet they're edible.
Dustin's approach to the autumn olive is one of management rather than eradication using herbicides. Autumn olive trees are difficult to completely get rid of because they reproduce so quickly thanks to the birds who eat the fruit and the tree's penchant for the local environment. His solution has been to eat them to beat them, to find ways to manage the trees on his land while introducing the fruit into the local food landscape as jam, fruit leather, and other products, capitalizing on something considered to be a problem without the actual cultivation of new trees. He also has the opinion, seen as controversial by some, that certain invasive species can provide a benefit, like attracting pollinators or preventing soil erosion.
People often just look at what's directly impacting them, which is, how does this affect my crops? How does this look around my yard or around my land? And can I make money from this? But they ignore a lot of the extra services that species provide.
Foraging for food, whether you're interested in eating invasives or not, Dustin says, is a way of eating from your community, knowing exactly where your food is coming from. You just need to be willing to learn about it and then to go get it. You can start with your backyard, but it's a big world out there. For Backyard Industry, this is Lisa Braltz.
Listening to Illinois Public Media's Public Radio for the Farming World. Up next, the National 4-H Foundation and Monsanto have put together an educational series for kids at summer camp. In a moment, you'll hear more on how the Fish Farm Challenge is helping boys and girls understand world hunger, world population, science, and engineering. Summer camp, it's awesome. Just ask anybody that goes. It's set up for fun and learning. This year, the staff and counselors at University of Illinois 4-H Memorial Camp near Monticello are trying out a new educational series. Megan Gleason, yes, she's my daughter, is directing the exercise this summer.
Today we're working on Poseidon's Fish Farm Challenge. This was posed to us by Monsanto and the 4-H National Council. Every week, groups of about 5 to 7 children participate in this, where they build a freestanding device that will equally distribute fish pellets across an aquaculture farm. The purpose of this project is to promote the end of world hunger and develop a strategy where we can develop food more quickly so that the growing population can eat.
The kids are given just a few materials and some fish food. Their job is to engineer a way for the food to be distributed evenly in the Fish Farm Challenge Circle, the pond, so that all the fish have a better chance to eat. Hundreds of kids are divided into teams of 5 to 7. They're competing and learning. Take, for instance, little Andrew Hopper from Southern Illinois.
So everybody here is pretty much making a machine. and we're testing it. Right now, my group is still working. I think they might be testing on it right now. And so it's really hard to do this, but we all need food. This is very important for every one of us.
It's really positive for the most part. A lot of the kids really enjoy the activity. They like being able to be their own team leader and make their own decisions. I think the hardest part I have conveying is that we're doing this project because there's a world hunger issue. Even though I explain that to them, not a lot of people pick up on that's the fact that we're doing this. They really believe it's a teamwork activity and to build trust and leadership skills, which of course is a great benefit, but not the ultimate goal. Some of our surveys really hinted the fact that a lot of them want to go into this field of engineering or geneticism, biology.
Not bad for a summer camp activity that sure looks like fun. The staff are documenting the Fish Farm Challenge. You might search eventually YouTube for their Fish Farm Challenge videos. One more ag note today before we get to the bottom of the half hour, and we'll talk with TGM's Matt Bennett about the cash grain segment. This one about a meeting you won't want to miss near Kankakee, Illinois. July the 30th, farmers and others can come to the U of I's Palmer Amaranth Research Site. It's located about a half mile east of the intersection of County Roads 14,000 West and 3,000 North near Union Hill, Illinois. That's east of Dwight and west of Kankakee, about halfway between the two. The tour will provide an excellent opportunity for farmers, input suppliers, and members of the media to have a first-hand encounter with the Palmer Amaranth population thriving just a few miles south of Illinois' largest city, Chicago. The tour will feature four presentations by wheat scientists that highlight the identification, biology, and management of Palmer Amaranth. Participants will receive a complimentary tour booklet that contains field research protocols and maps that will help guide them through the research plots. The tour will begin at 9 o'clock in the morning and conclude with a catered lunch around noon. Advanced registration is needed and can be accomplished by visiting the BearRespectTheRotation.com website. Again, that web address is all one word, BearRespectTheRotation.com, as in Bear, the company, B-A-Y-E-R. Everyone is welcome, and there is no fee to attend the tour. As you may have guessed by now, the University of Illinois Palmer Amaranth field research activities and tour are in collaboration with scientists and researchers from Bayer Crop Science. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. I'll be back in just 2 minutes. We'll take a look at the agricultural cash grain markets with Matt Bennett from TGM in Windsor, Illinois. One other item, since we were talking about weeds, do you know the noxious weeds list that by law it is your duty as a state citizen to eradicate? Here it is. Common ragweed, giant ragweed, marijuana, musk thistle, Canada thistle, kudzu, perennial sow thistle, Columbus grass, and Johnson grass.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC. Providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
This is Illinois Public Media.
It's National Peach Ice Cream Day. The origins of ice cream can be traced back to at least the 4th century B.C., Roman Emperor Nero would often order ice brought back from the mountains and combined with fruit toppings. The first ice cream parlor in America opened in New York City in 1776. Originally, it was called Iced Cream, which later was abbreviated to the name we know today. On this day in agricultural history in 1839, Amphrom Shea was born. An American logger, Shea invented the Shea-geared small steam locomotive to haul heavy logging trains at low speeds over rough terrain with poorly laid uneven track, sharp curves, and grades of up to 14%. In 1790, Thomas Saint, a London cabinet maker, received a patent for possibly the first sewing machine, fitted with an awl that both punched and allowed a needle to pass through leather. Saint's conception used only a single thread and formed a chain stitch. Saint never followed up and made a working model of his patent design. In 1938, Douglas Wrongway Corrigan landed his plane in Dublin, Ireland, after a 28-hour flight in which he claimed he did not know he was traveling over the Atlantic. He was supposed to be heading to California from New York City. And in 1995, the NASDAQ stock index closed above the 1,000 mark for the first time in history. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's check the cash grain market now on a Thursday afternoon with Matt Bennett from TGM. He's in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Have you walked your fields, and how do they look?
I have walked them. Really look good. We haven't seen any real problem areas. Best looking corn that we've really ever scouted, I guess, this time of year. And with the field conditions the way they are, plenty of moisture. And then, of course, we don't have a whole lot of heat right now. It's pretty good for grain fill, so I guess we feel pretty good about that.
And your soybeans?
Beans look pretty good. You know, we had a fair amount of April planted beans, and they've gotten really tall on us. And then some of the May planted beans are lagging a little bit in size, but I feel like with the heat that's coming on and the moisture in the soil, they're probably going to catch up and look pretty good as well.
Earlier in the week, I was looking at the USDA AMS Ag Marketing Service charts related to the cash grain for both corn and soybeans. The corn chart, of course, shows cash grain well below the five-year rolling average for cash price at this point. But the soybean chart, right at the five-year rolling average, and I'm wondering whether soybeans are overpriced at this time.
Well, you know, that'd be an argument a lot of guys would like to make, especially considering that we probably will shift maybe from less of a burdensome cash situation once we get the new crop started. And then, you know, of course, from a world situation, it's going to be a little bit better as well. So I think as of right now, maybe you could make that case that it's okay just simply because we're so tight on cash. But I do think that that's about to change.
Now, you change in what way?
Well, I think that that's going to change if we have any crop this year with the kind of acreage that we have on the table, according to the USDA. If we have a national yield of 45 or better, I mean, we're obviously going to have plenty of beans to go around.
Now, you have been the one guy all along that said make sure you make some sales up front. I think even on the soybeans, we're still at a price tag that if things change, as the USDA has suggested, and we're thinking in the field, do you feel confident in making additional sales for beans?
You know, I do. A lot of it would depend upon the producer's individual situation. If they've already made sales farther on up and they want to go ahead and protect from further deterioration, I wouldn't have any problem with that. I think, you know, you're talking about a five-year average, but as you well know, you don't have to go back much more before 5 years, and you're going to be, historically speaking, at very good bean prices. So, you know, when we look at that, I think that, you know, if you throw a decent yield with these beans, you can certainly make money, you know, in this $10.50 to $11 range still.
And I'll turn your attention back to the corn market. How is the basis for the fall acting at this time? What does delivery look like? How quickly do you think the first crop might come in?
Yeah, I do think basis for us has not changed for quite some time. I don't look for it to change. It's a very good question, though, as far as when we're going to start and what things are going to look like in the fall. We've had several guys talking, wondering if there will be any, you know, drying deals early on, and I don't really foresee anything major going on this year, considering we're probably going to come into this new crop with a fair amount of corn that will be accessible for most people. And so, You know, space is going to be an issue later on, though, so who knows? Guys may pick early, but I don't think before Labor Day.
Thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us.
Thanks, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with TGM out of Windsor, Illinois. He joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, and that wraps it up. I'm Yovie Extension's Todd Gleason.